Hey there, welcome to the About Your Body podcast. I'm Rachel Holt, the founder and one-woman show behind About Your Body. I'm a visual designer who has an ever-growing interest in the biofemale reproductive system. There is a lot of stigma surrounding the biofemale body, and I truly believe that to reclaim our bodies as our own, we need to understand how they work. I want to use my design skills to empower people, especially young girls, to learn all about how incredible their body is and what it can do. On this podcast, I'll be sharing real people's stories and biofemale experiences, as well as conducting interviews with healthcare professionals to break down the complexity of how the body works. I would like to acknowledge that this podcast was recorded on stolen land, the land of the Gadigal people. I pay my utmost respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and their continuing connection to Australian land, sea, and sky. Australia always was and always will be Aboriginal land. I'd also like to say that About Your Body was created as an initiative that stands for the rights of all people, including everybody who identifies as a woman, everybody who has or has had biofemale bodily characteristics, as well as intersex people, gender non-conforming people, and Indigenous sister girls and brother boys. Hey everyone, and welcome to the next About Your Body interview. Today, I'm so excited to bring you this one. I am talking to my dear friend, Victoria, the founder of Extra Pinata. So this conversation is all about emotional resilience and emotional well-being, and I think you're going to really find it interesting. Victoria is a maker of things that can evoke an emotional experiential response. Although she is a full-time product designer, she has a deep passion to enrich people's emotional well-being, especially what she coins our next generation of heroes. She believes that technology can change human behavior for the greater good, and she hopes that whatever she does will help another human being. So today we are going to be talking all things emotion through technology with her, and I can't wait to get started. So let's get into it. Hello, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to speaking with you today about emotional well-being, so I'm looking forward.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to have a friend that is so dedicated to helping people understand their emotions and dedicated to emotional well-being. And I feel like in this time, especially, like, let's not even talk about how badly 2020 went. We really need people like you. And to see my feed flooded with Extra Pinata stuff is just like the best. This is a highlight of my day whenever you post anything. So I would love to just start by just even talking about what you do. Like, what is your mission with Extra Pinata?
Well, I see Extra Pinata as just being like a launch pad for me, because what I really hope to achieve is to emotionally connect with people and help them go on a deep and meaningful level. I connect with them on a deep and meaningful level. I was like, if I could do anything in the world, the one thing that I would like to is to make an impact within the education system. This has always been a life goal of mine. I want to design courses for children to learn about emotions and making mental health a conversation equally as important as physical health, if not more important, making our new generation more equipped for the wondrous and ambiguous journey that they're about to embark. So yeah, making emotion the forefront, a conversation that is at the forefront of everyone on an everyday basis.
Oh my gosh, it's so, so important, especially for, like, I can't speak to any situation other than my own, but my experience as like a young woman in school or as a girl in school, that was something that if I had, you know, being taught that emotional well-being and emotions are the most important thing, that they should be treated with paramount importance, that would have been really, really helpful when I was growing up. And luckily I had like a very understanding mother who taught me things like that, but the rest of the world, I don't think, behaves in that way. Like, we put a lot of effort into making money and looking good and things like that, but we don't always put enough effort into how we actually feel.
Yeah, and even though it's interesting, because I feel like emotions is something that we embody every single day, like we experience so many emotions in one single day, and it's not just positive, or like, just, it's not just comfortable but also uncomfortable emotions. And our society constructs this idea that uncomfortable emotions cannot be seen in public eye, that we have to hide it, that we have to oppress it. And I think that is so problematic because we can see with the numbers that are increasing right now for mental health, there's a rise in anxiety and depression and actually all sorts of mental health disorders. And there's a rise in like suicide and suicides as well. And especially in the last year, you can see that these rates have increased drastically. And I think it is more important now than ever to have this kind of conversation and to really pay attention to our mental well-being. Because our mental well-being and our physical well-being are so intertwined with one another. We can't just focus on eating healthy and staying active. We also need to be reflecting and meditating and taking care of our mind in order to actually be more productive throughout the day and become more resilient when challenges like last year throws at us. We know how to handle it.
Oh, my gosh. No, that's such a good point with, like, every time you go to I was gonna say go to a doctor, but anytime you tell anyone that you're feeling upset, they're like, you better probably not eating right, you probably exercise a bit more. And it's like, that's not enough. Like, that's great, but I mean, that leads into my next question, actually. Like, why is it so important to understand our emotions, like to talk about them and to understand them? We can sort of do that in an amalgamation. I know that's a big question, though.
I can go on days about it.
That's cool. We've got all the time in the world.
But in kind of short, I know it's not going to be short, but yeah. Emotions is central to everything we do, hear, see, or say. If we don't learn or to understand our emotions, we let emotions control our attitude and our behavior. You know, the National Science Foundation found that an average person has about 12,000 to 60,000 thoughts per day, and 80% of them are negative, and 95% are repetitive thoughts from the previous day. And every thought triggers an emotion. So can you imagine like how many different emotions we feel or ruminate in our mind in one day?
Like, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. And if we don't reflect upon them and get to know them, then we pretty much have disconnected ourselves from ourselves, right? Like every relationship that we make with another human being is based off emotions. Love is an infatuation is an emotion. So we create emotions through the conversations we make, the information that we read or watch online, and through the sensations when we touch on our skin, like for example taking a bath, that creates some kind of emotion. Everything that we do and everything that we touch, everything that we hear, everything that we say, like I said at the beginning, creates a sense of emotion. And so every day we accumulate an entire bag of emotions. And if we do not attend to them on a daily basis, we are literally carrying days, weeks, months, years of emotional baggage that is constantly weighing us down. And as humans, when we experience any kind of emotion, we have this habitual behavior of creating a story behind it, right? For example, like, when I feel angry, that we think, therefore, you know, he or she must be wrong. When they disappointed, they must be unimpressed with our work, our creative work, or whatever kind of job that you're doing. When we create stories about our emotions, we reel it into existence and make it into an even bigger emotion because we're validated. We validated our emotion. But don't get me wrong, like I'm not saying that we should avoid it or we should pass it. We should just let emotions be it, like let it be an emotion. Lean into that emotion, experience it, and let it be. When we can let emotion be just simply an emotion, we can then kind of view it from a third perspective and reflect. So like, why am I feeling this way? What triggered this emotion? What does this emotion mean on a deeper level? And what has this emotion taught me about myself? So, like, to sum it up, like, emotions carry meaning. It's not stories.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Damn. I've never thought of it like that at all. And I feel like when it comes to letting your emotions just exist and accepting that it came up, I don't know, do you think that usually sometimes you can't find a reason for an emotion and that's okay? Or do you think usually there is a reason that a particular emotion arose?
There is always a reason that if it's a strong emotion, there is always a reason that it particularly arose. I mean, like,
okay,
if you just touch something and like you felt a sense of emotion, probably doesn't have that much of a meaning. But any strong emotion, so if you feel super happy about something or super upset or concerned about something, there is a meaning behind it. It's about asking yourself those questions and getting to know yourself of what those meanings are, because I think we are so attuned in our society where we see sadness as, oh, you're upset about something. But it doesn't have to be that you're upset about something, right? It could be like, and even if it is, like, what are you upset about? Is it the feeling of losing someone? Why does that feel bad? Is it because that person had a deeper connection with you and that there is something that you lost, not just the person, but a relationship or a friendship or some kind of connection that the two of you had bonded that was broken now, you know? Really go into like asking yourself like the five whys, like why? Why do I feel sad? Like why does this situation make me feel sad, you know? And really question yourself. And the more you do, it's quite interesting because it helps you, it really prompts you to create a more meaningful life, I think. And that's how I got to where I want to do what I want to do. I can't say that I got to where I am right now because I don't think I'm there yet, but it really prompted like my direction of where I want to be or become.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. I was going to ask, like, Victoria and I did the same degree at university, which is visual communication design. So what prompted you to start doing work in education about emotional resilience and emotional well-being, which is like not something at all that we learn about in our degree? It's like, it's a very interesting path to take and I love it.
Yeah, I think I've always been curious about people and understanding people's attitude and behavior. From a very young age, I loved to study people and I didn't realize at that time. But what I mean is that I could sit for hours and just staring at another person and observing their mannerisms, like super weird and creepy. Like I would make stories in my head and wonder what the couple might be arguing about and why they move their body, the way they move their body in conflict. I just thought it was so interesting to me as I stare intensely. And in fact, like I often would get in trouble by other people because it was just rude to stare and eavesdrop. Like you don't do that as a culture, as a society. But I was just so curious about the words and body language people choose to use when engaging in any form of interaction that I couldn't help myself. And with that being said, like I wanted to become a psychologist, but I realized that, you know, in high school that I realized that being a psychologist requires a lot of reading and writing, which I was not excited for at all. And I was, at the same time, I was always into design. Like design was my only outlet. Yeah, like creativity, like not design specifically, I guess art was my only outlet to kind of express how I felt being an only child and someone who had a lot of worked up emotions that I didn't know how to express and I didn't have anybody to talk to. And so I thought, you know, going into university, I thought design was a really great outlet for me to communicate myself and to kind of communicate how I feel and understand how other people feel. I think advertising was something that I was super interested in because it kind of uses a bit of psychology when you're creating adverts.
And so then after
a university, I wanted to continue to work with people, because the reason why I chose design wasn't because I was talented or I was really good at illustration. It's because I really wanted to use design to communicate a message to someone or somebody and help someone and to brighten up their day. And I continued to kind of live by that motto. And I guess that took me to where I am right now. Trying to become an emotional designer.
Oh, I love that, because it's actually didn't realize how similar we were. Like so my parents are doctors, and so I was like, oh, I should study medicine, but I knew I didn't want to. I always knew I didn't want to, because I was like, that's so much work.
Yeah.
And so then I design, well, probably same with me, like art was my like outlet, art and music. But music became for me a chore. Like it was something that I did music for school, and so then I had to keep doing music, and it wasn't something that I kept enjoying. And even now I don't even listen to music that much, because it's been like burnt. I'm like burnt out from music. And so I like would, yeah, design and art was my only outlet, and that's why I've started to do design surrounding women's health, because yeah. I really want to work in women's health. I really don't want to do a medicine degree. Like that's like the middle ground. And it's so interesting to think about with like, I mean, I know the work that you've produced at uni and outside of uni, and yeah, you have the best brain. Like I just am in awe of your mind. You have a really inspiring mind. You do. Don't say no. and like it's really interesting to think about with the psychology behind like sales and marketing and advertising and stuff. We don't learn heaps about that in design, but we kind of learn about the psychology behind visual communication. And I think people don't think that those two things are connected. It's like design is just making things look pretty, but it's not. Design is like you can completely change the way somebody views an idea or has a perspective on an issue, or their understanding of what you're communicating by the way you communicate it. So like if I did my drawings all in like bright red, they would seem really scary, for example. And so yeah. That's why I used like a muted pink most of the time.
And the interesting thing is that only you know that, as I mean, not only you, but as a designer, you know that. And I think that's why I wanted to call myself as an emotional designer and not a product designer, because I'm not product centric. I am human centric. And I know that there is a phrase called like human centered design, or not a phrase, a term called human centered design. But I like to call myself an emotional designer because I want to design with people's emotions in mind. I think we often create products without fully understanding users' emotional experience. We are often so focused on meeting their needs or the pain points that we fail to identify the underlying emotion that is attached to the problem. So, for example, a company may identify that people need a product that can help them make better purchasing decisions, for example. But what are the emotions that the consumers are experiencing right now? Is it frustration? Is it anger? Are they shopping because they are bored? Are they stressed? And from then on, like, why are they frustrated? Why are they angry? Why are they bored? Like, when we dive deep into the emotion, we may realize that the problem may not be making better purchasing decisions, but it could be something entirely different. Like, and I think that is what fascinates me the most. And when we work in a company, especially like as a product designer, when we work in a company, there is often a divide between UX designers, UI designers, marketing, engineering team. And what I never really understood is that people saw my role, or saw product designers as, okay, like we find all the information, you just make it look pretty. And I'm like, no, like we understand, like every single mark that we make on our piece of work, every color, every font choice, it has a reason behind it. And in order for me to design well, I need to know like what does the people want? Like what I need to have a connection with the consumer, not just like sit behind a screen and you give me like research data and I'm just gonna like make it look pretty for you. That is not the reason why we design.
Oh my gosh, she's speaking my language. Yes, that sentence. We're so focused on the pain points that we don't even think about, like, the underlying emotion. I'm going to write that down later. It's too late. You've said it now. I listened to it in the recording. I think that's what makes a piece of communication effective, is whether or not there was actually thought that went into it. And yeah, I actually usually say I want to do human-centered design, but I love your term, emotional design. That's like, being an emotional designer, that's even, I think that's even better. I like that even more. Yeah. And it's, that's why I think that's probably why you're very talented at UX design, like user experience, for people who don't know what UX means. And I think people also usually think of UX as UI, user interface. They're like, oh, that's about making the app look like, kind of, I'm trying to think of a word other than normal, like look like every other app out there and like make it look nice. But that's not what UX is. UX is like understanding the user's need and ultimately optimizing their experience of the product or service. Like, it doesn't necessarily, like, UX doesn't necessarily mean apps, for example.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't,
yeah. And that's why I think Cuppa was such a good design. Cuppa was an app, actually, that Victoria designed, but but like, it wasn't just a nice looking app. It had so much community behind it. Like, it was so community centered. So good. yes, thank you. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for all of that. A lot of the time when somebody acts out in cheating is a great example, I think, when somebody acts out in cheating, or when somebody acts out by going on like a massive bender, which we tend to do a lot in Australia. We have a big binge drinking culture. It's like, it's just like, oh, they're so stupid. Like, that's so bad. But it's like, that's not stupid. They've got stuff going on. And I think what would be actually helpful is if we tried to ask that person, like, hey, are you okay? Because the other day you acted very differently than you usually do. Not that going on a bender, actually, I don't think going on a bender is like the worst thing you can do, but if it's something out of character for them, then you know that something might be wrong. That's why the work you do is so amazing and so important, because it's just, I feel like in your work you're trying to make emotional resilience normal. Is that, would you say that?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to make uncomfortable emotions normal. And I think the other thing, an interesting point that you had brought up was that I have a problem with seeing, I mean, I've always given people the benefit of the doubt, no matter how many times they've hurt me or how many, like, things that they've done wrong. I always give that benefit of the doubt, right? And I think that, like, part of the reason why, like you had said, that when someone has got, like, when someone cheats on you or when someone goes on a bender, they have a deeper reason why they're doing this. And as a society, we are so quick on labeling someone as good or bad just by that one data point, that one situation that we, one story that we heard of them. And we don't give anyone, we don't give anyone the benefit of the doubt. We just label them as, oh, they cheated, they're bad. That's it. End of story.
Wow.
And we don't consider why they cheated. Like, why? Like, and really, like, put yourself in their shoe. Like, is it because, like, maybe with their current partner, that sexual desire doesn't, like, isn't happening, or their partner is emotionally, like, unattentive and unavailable for him or her, you know? Mm-hmm. Or maybe, like, you know, what is the reason? Like, what's the conversations that they're having? You as a third person don't understand what's happening between person A and person B and their relationship. Like, you don't understand. And so you as an outsider can't just say, just because they cheated, they're a bad person. Like, you don't know the full story. You really just don't know. And we just can't label someone as bad and good. And maybe that action that they did was bad. It still doesn't mean that you can label them as a bad person. That comes to, like, a bigger problem that I want to talk about. You know, when I look around the world today and I hear the conversations people are having on social media or on news outlet, it really irritates me and breaks my heart, because our society has become so polarized and divided that the word unity seems to have vanished. You know, it has become a culture where it's us versus them, a society that is constantly blaming the opponent for all the disasters that are happening around the world. When in perspective, we are all acting out of fearful love, and fearful love because we are scared while simultaneously wanting to be loved and to find peace. No one is doing anything purposely to harm the good of the society. I genuinely don't think that anyone is like literally, I mean, general population isn't ought to like literally do something just to because out of like, I want this whole world to crumble, you know. They are doing it because they have like a deep value and a reason behind it. And so I think when we are so scared or lost, as a society, we're trained to either fix the problem, or if that is not possible, then we should ignore it. For instance, like, oh, you're feeling lonely. A relationship can fix that. Oh, you're like, you don't like your nose. Oh, you can go get plastic surgery. That would fix that. Or like, you know, you're feeling stressed or anxious. You have a perfectly attuned distraction in your pocket. And the problem with this, of course, is that like we are less and less able to move through any hardships because we have been taught to avoid the pain. Like sadness is bad. Happy is good. Happy is desirable. So we ignore the bad stuff. But like I said, it accumulates over time. It weighs us down without knowing. Then when something terrible happens, we go into like a flight or fight mode and pull up our barriers and shut certain people off. We lose the ability to be compassionate to ourselves, those who we agree with, and those people that we disagree with too. Like we lose the ability to view things from a different perspective because we're like, nah, like this is it. It is this or it's not none of this, you know? Mm. And by training ourselves to from a young age, which is why I want to work with children, by training ourselves from a young age to open our hearts at the most vulnerable state will allow true compassion for others and for ourselves. It will help us identify the trigger points and the things we value in life. So what I'm trying to say is that how I kind of see what's happening around the world right now is that we are acting out of like fear. And when we do, we shut all our windows, we shut all our doors, we lock ourselves in, and we only see things through one perspective. And I know this is going to be so controversial, and I feel like people are not gonna like this, but you know, I like to see things from two perspectives. You know, I like to see things from the Republican view. I love to see things from the from the liberal view. You know, seeing both sides and why they're both acting in that way and what are the reasons behind it, and really empathize with both perspectives. Yeah. And I think that is where the true power comes in, is not taking sides and seeing both sides of their perspective, because they are both carrying values that are important to them. And that's why they're acting that way. And I think that when we cause fight and we cause problems when we aren't able to do that. And why are we not being able to do that? Because we don't understand our own emotions. And I don't know if that
it all comes full circle.
I don't know if it does, but in my head it comes full circle. And yeah, I just think that people need to like be more empathetic. And I think saying be more empathetic is such a airy-fairy phrase, because it's easy to say. It's one thing to say it and one thing to actually act upon it.
Yeah, that's true. I think I know what you said is controversial, but I love it because I think it's so important that we have, that we at least try to see where the other person is coming from. And sometimes maybe you won't be able to. Like sometimes there are some views, for example, a certain orange man who was in power for a little while there, like, I really struggle to understand where he's coming from. But
yeah.
But at the end of the day, I guess the people who follow him, they're people. And people have so many things that, so many aspects of their life make them think a certain way. And it doesn't mean you have to agree with them. because I don't, but it's good to try and understand it. I don't know. I'm working on that real hard. Like, that's not something that comes naturally to me. I'm definitely the kind of person who's like, nope, disagree, not talking to you. And I don't think that's helpful. I think that's a really, really, actually a pretty horrible way I've found to live my life, because then I've just like cut perspectives out that maybe later on in my life I might even gravitate toward those perspectives. It's kind of like what you said earlier in the, much earlier in the podcast, like basically at the start of the recording, you said that like we experience, I think you, did you say 60,000 thoughts a day, between 12 to 60,000? Yeah. But we're told that the only thoughts that are good, or emotions, sorry, because emotions and thoughts aren't the same thing, right? But we're taught that the only ones that matter are like the happy ones, and we should strive for those. But life is like, you know, there's that yin yang. You can't have happiness without sadness. And you can't have healing without hurt. And yeah, I guess everything has an opposite, or at least something that is a bit dissimilar. And yeah, I feel like I'm learning so much from you in this conversation. You have a way of what you're saying is not necessarily radical. You just have a way of wording it that's so understandable and approachable. And I love that so much.
Thank you. I'm also kind of worried that I might be saying something that can be taken the wrong way. But I guess what I'm also trying to say is, you know, by understanding the other side's perspective, you can convince them or change their perspective by being in their shoe rather than forcing, but rather than using force. And that's kind of what I mean by like, see things from both sides of perspective. You don't necessarily have to agree with like ones like the Republicans or like with Trump, but in order to really change a habit, or like, I mean, change a human behavior or a habit, is really by understanding their perspective, and then finding the loopholes of how can I change their perspective, or how can I not, maybe not change them, but enlighten them to new opportunities, to new ideas. It's not going to work by just like telling them, no, like that's not right. End of conversation. It's not going to work through force. It's also not going to work through ignorant or blocking them. You know what I mean? Like way it's going to work is by having that conversation with them in like a humanistic manner. I don't know if that's even a word, but in a very human manner, by through showing compassion, like showing them that like, I'm just trying to understand you and I want to understand you. And by trying, and then by really embodying the perspective, then you're able to be like, okay, I finally get it. But then why do I feel this way? Maybe it's because X, Y, and Z. That then you can start actually like fixing the problem. I think what I'm saying is that we are so quick on just like shutting the other side, like shutting things that we don't want to hear, and not being able to see both sides of the world, both perspectives. And I think that's very toxic when you're not able to kind of do that. Yeah.
I think how it relates, to our conversation in particular, is that when you are doing that, which it is really easy to do, I've done that thing where you block someone and you're just like, you're out of my life. And then you're like, oh, that probably wasn't really the right way to react, but I've done it now. And it's like kind of embarrassing to be like, oh, I'll unblock you. Like, and it's not a nice feeling to be blocked, because I've been blocked myself. And yeah, like, it's not like I wish that I hadn't done that to other people in the past. So I don't do it anymore. But I think when you do things like that, you are, you're doing what you need to do at the time to cope. Like, sometimes maybe you're blocking someone because they've said something really hurtful, for example. Mm-hmm. But it is also, I think, often, maybe not always, but often a signifier that you've not, that those emotions are like too hard for you to process right now, and you're not in touch with your emotions. And then later on, when you're in touch with your emotions, you possibly might feel differently, or you might not. Like with the example of blocking someone, you might still feel like, no, I needed to block them. And that's good, because you've thought about it. I think the best example I have a good example of this, is when I used to be involved in doing the poster design for an organization called Reclaim the Night, the Sydney branch. It was some other young women and I, and it was It was about ending sexual violence against women and non-binary people. So what I call generally gendered violence. And I posted once this poster and was like, end gendered violence with hashtag, I don't know, feminism or something like that. And this random guy who was probably like a little bit older than us, I would have been like 20 at this time. This random guy who was a couple of years older than me, who was clearly identified as a man, commented on it, violence isn't gendered, it happens to men too, hashtag men too. And I almost responded like, oh, fuck off, like I'm not here for this, because statistically women and non-binary people, and like, let's not even go into transgender people, that's a whole, the statistics for that are so much worse, but violence against women in particular is so rampant, and the statistics are so horrible. But I realized this guy had probably experienced violence himself, or he wouldn't be having that kind of reaction. And so I sent him this response. I think I honestly probably remember the response word for word. It was basically like, hey, at such and such, you're totally right. Violence does happen to anyone. Clearly it doesn't discriminate based on gender. What I mean when I say violence is gendered is that statistically, women are 20 times more likely to be murdered by their partner than a man is. I'm not sure about that statistic. I made that up on my head, but it's something like that. And so that's what we mean when we say violence is gendered. And I also saw in his bio that he was a Christian. And so I quoted a verse from Galatians that says in Christ, there is no male or female, no Jew nor Gentile, like that we are all equal under the eyes of God. And he responded straight away and he said, totally get ya. Thanks for clarifying. Cheers. And I was like, that was the best interaction I've ever had over the internet, ever.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I mean. Like, I love how you did that. Like, instead of like telling him to fuck off, we would have triggered his emotion even more. You had actually put yourself in his shoe and understood, like, he's probably going through something or had gone through something, which is exactly right. Yeah. And you know, another way of kind of approaching a situation like that is by, you know, asking telling that person like, hey, like, you probably said, like, probably what you have said didn't mean any harm, but I just want to let you know it sometimes people can interpret it as X, Y, and Z, you know, like,
yeah, that's so true.
Like, give that person a benefit of doubt. Be like, hey, like, I know you probably didn't mean to hurt me, but it made me feel a certain way. And let them know. And that's totally fine, you know, like, yeah. And I think it's such a better way of approaching it than being like, that hurt my feelings. I don't need that in my life. Like, blah, blah, like, just like outright, like, calling out that person. And a really good example is like being late, you know, when you're late. This is something that I read from a book. It's like when they say, like, when you as a person, you're late to an event because of traffic or because of X, Y, and Z, you expect the other person to understand, because you're like, I'm trying to get there, like, I am running late and like I'm trying all my best ways to get there, right? But when you're early and you're waiting for, like, when you're already at the event and someone that you're waiting for is text you and say that they're late, your immediate thought process is like, oh, they're so irresponsible. Like,
Always
late, you know?
And I thought, it's like, Rachel, you were late 2 weeks ago. Like,
like, when it's yourself, you expect someone else to understand you. But when it's somebody else, you just don't give them any excuse. And it's because, like, our thought and our emotions are the freshest in our heads. And we judge our personality and our character through our most current thought, emotion, action, and sensation, right? But we judge another character purely based on their action, because that's the only thing that we see. We don't see their thought process at all. We can't, because it's like in their head. We don't know what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm saying, like, we need to communicate. Like, say, like, hey, like, what you had just said had harmed me, or like had hurt me, or like, I know I didn't intend to, like, and that's totally fine, but I just want to let you know, like, if you're going to say this in the future, like, it could have X, Y, and Z implications. Make it super neutral, you know, and It's just such a wonderful, like, such a better way, I guess, of, like, making conversations and having hard conversations with other people.
Wow! Yes! I don't mind at all. Actually, I love when somebody sends me a message or even a comment, like, it can be public, and in a kind way just says, like, hey, I don't think your language there was as good as it could have been. Maybe next time you could say this, just letting you know, because, like, that can be construed in a certain way, or that actually hurt my feelings, but you probably didn't know that. Then I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, thank you so much for bettering me. And I guess, I don't know, maybe it's not for everyone, but for me, life is, the purpose of life is to grow as a human, and so that's, you can't do that without your emotions and emotional growth. I feel like you can't grow as a person if your emotions don't grow with you.
Yeah, and, like, the other thing is that when we feel a certain emotion, like I said in this podcast, is that we create a story around it, right? Mm. And that we should really drop that story that we create around that emotion, and describe the emotion objectively. Like, describe the situation objectively, accept it and understand the situation, and don't intertwine it with all these emotions, because when we do, we literally just, like, create a bigger situation than it probably has to be. And so, yeah, like, you know, when someone bumped into me and then I feel like, when I'm in a supermarket and this lady just walks straight into me and she doesn't turn around and apologize, and I'm like, what on earth? Like, that is so rude. Like, why did she not apologize? Like, why did she bump? She must hate me. Or, like, on the other hand, you're like, oh my God, like, nobody likes me. She, even, like, this random lady on the street, like, hates me. And why is everyone always bullying me? And we create these stories, right? But it could simply be the fact that this woman had no idea. She walked into you. She was distracted with whatever she's about to do. And she just didn't know, like, she just didn't feel it as much as you had felt it. You know, it could literally be as simple as that. But we ruminate it and we create all these thoughts, and which makes these emotions, and it creates into, it becomes a bigger story than it really has to be.
Wow. Yeah, no, this is such an important conversation to have. Sometimes I lie in bed just making up stories about my life that haven't happened, and they're bad stories. It's like, oh, this person betrays me. Like, I make up a story in my head. And then I, like, well, it'll be like 10 minutes of me ruminating this hatred. And then I'll be like, why was I thinking of that? That didn't even happen. Like, this didn't even happen.
Yeah.
And I feel like worrying, or it's not necessarily worrying, but making up those negative stories is just a waste of our precious imagination. Like, our minds have the capability to think of such wonderful things. So I'm not sure why we put so much emphasis on thinking of horrible things, but maybe we would have better emotional stability if we stopped doing that.
But at the same time, like, oh, yeah, this is the other point that, you know how you were speaking about earlier about how we should focus on the happy thoughts and not the sad thoughts, or you read somewhere that said we should only focus on the happy thoughts.
Oh, I read that we tend to only give emphasis, like, yeah, we only see the happy thoughts as important, whereas the sad thoughts, like, let's just push that aside.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's
exactly right. I think it's because we were built into this culture where, like, happy emotions are likable and are praised by other people, and sad emotions or uncomfortable emotions aren't liked by others. Like, anger is not liked by public eye. Sadness, you should hide it. Like, no one wants to see you cry. Like, why would you want to make another person sad by making, just because you're sad, why would you want to make another person sad? So you hide it, right? We hide those emotions. But what I really learned over, like, the last 2 years is that these uncomfortable emotions are so much more important than the happy emotions. Every time that you felt uncomfortable, every single time that you felt sad or felt lost or felt scared or felt confused, what did you do? you know, like, did you, like, most of us, right, would have, would see opportunities or go apply for a job. If we lost a job, we'll go apply for a job. We would, I don't know, what's another sad situation that's very common, I guess, if we broke up, we'll seek for friendship, we'll seek for, like, support mm-hmm. from other people. Right. Every time we felt a low moment, we go out and find opportunities. And so what I would say, what I like to think is that discomfort and suffering and pain are an opportunity to learn and to seek for greater things in life. Because when you're happy and you're content, you're not going to, like, find something new. You're not going to change your trajectory of where you're going at. It's only when you're feeling lost and scared and uncomfortable, right? So whenever you're feeling sad, I like to ask myself, why am I feeling this way? And or whenever I'm scared or feeling lost or feeling purposeless, I like to ask myself that, because maybe what I'm doing right now isn't giving me purpose. And so instead of being like, sigh, I am just stuck in this job and it's not giving me purpose and it's completely meaningless, I go, okay, so what would I want to rather do that would give me purpose? Maybe I have to change my job. Maybe, like, besides working, I need to do a side hustle that fulfills that passion, like what you're doing. You know, you're a freelance graphic designer, but on the side you're working on about your body, because that fuels your passion, that gives you light and that gives you hope. It opens new avenue for you. And I think that does that make sense? Have so much rich experience, and we need to lean into it. And that's what I mean, like, leaning into it and experiencing it and learning about it. Like, what has this emotion taught me about myself?
I absolutely love that. Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Yeah, I think that's so, it's an essential part of growth. And yeah, that's, oh my gosh, couldn't have said that better. And, like, if we've recognized, I think, during this conversation that it's really good to get more in touch with your emotions, can you recommend any small changes that we could make to our everyday life to get more in touch with our emotions? Like, maybe some actionable tips or a mindset shift or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's heaps. And I think one of, like, the most common ones are sleep. Making sure you get 8 hours of sleep are really important. When you're sleep deprived, you're naturally not as in tune with your emotions and your thought process and your decision making capabilities.
Yeah.
Reflection, you know, that's an obvious one. And like doing gratitude, like saying, like, what you're grateful for every single day is another one. And I think at the end of the day, like, these are, like, eating healthy, like I said, like, and exercising, doing something like a form of creative expression, whether that is dancing or art or painting, or music or singing, like, whatever it is, that, you know, a form of creative expression that can help you kind of release these emotions is really important. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's not necessarily the specific activity. So you don't just have, it's not that you have to reflect, like, reflection is the only way to be in tune with the emotions. What I'm trying to say is that we need to find a task that is meaningful to us, that takes us to a state of flow. This means that activities that are both conscious and unconscious, a feeling where time halts and we are able to kind of perform a task where, like, we almost lose track of time. And when we're in that state, that's when we can really reset, restart, and replenish. So for some people, it's cooking. Like, cooking is a form of releasing emotions or coming back to your center self, you know. And because it's so creative, it's playful, it takes their time, it takes their mind off what's happening around the world, right, or what's happening in their current life. For some other people, it's cleaning. You know, cleaning feels good, and afterwards it feels great because your place is nice, and that gives you that whole expansive feeling where, you know, everything is, like, restarted and refreshed, like I said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So finding something that is meaningful to you, it can be anything. And what I would say is that do it at least 10 minutes a day. You know, okay. Go for a walk, just a walk without any music, no sound, nothing. Just walk for 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be like, oh, like, you know, cook a 2-hour meal or dance for 2 hours. Literally, honestly, like, even if you don't even have time for that, play a song, like any song that you like, a happy song, and just dance like nobody is watching until that song ends. And a song is only like 3 to 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
And tell me how you feel after that. Like, not a sad song, like a happy song. Like, you know, and dance your heart out, you know? And you're going to feel good afterwards. You're not going to feel good. And the other thing I would say is expand your emotional vocabulary. If you only know 4 words, like happy, sad, angry, scared, then you can only express them in 4 different ways, right? But if you can separate anger to frustration or annoyance, or like maybe it's like irritation, right? Then you have a different approach to these different subcategories. So expand your emotional vocabulary, learn new emotional words. And I think that's something that I want to kind of like implement into the education system, like into this new education system that I would love to be part of, is helping children expand their emotional vocabulary. Because at the moment, from what I've heard of and spoken to, is that in schools, we only teach 8 emotional words, like joy, happy, I think sad, angry, scared, fear, shame. Can't remember the last one. Like, there's only 8 of them. But in the world, there's over like 30,000 emotional words to describe an emotion. And can you imagine if you're able to separate them into all your experiences to 30,000 emotions? I think people will experience less depression, which is such a common word that we use. Like, I feel depressed. But what does depressed really mean? Like, which category of depression are you feeling? And categorize it, separate it, because we see it all into one circle and one lens. And so that's why we feel like our world is in depression. Does that make sense?
It does, but I'm
also not saying like those who are like diagnosed with depression. I'm just speaking about people who just use depression as, I feel depressed as a way of expressing themselves. Yeah.
Well, I feel like, that's a very good point, because it's very, I think a lot of the time the words anxiety and depression, or not anxiety and depression, anxious and depressed, are thrown around as normal vocabulary, and those are normal words. But that's but the emotion of anxiety, we know, doesn't mean that you have generalized anxiety disorder. Those things are different. Like, you might, but I hope not, because that's not a nice disorder to have. But I totally get everything you're saying. That's so helpful. And I definitely think that with Extra Pinata, you are like, I know it's only in the very humble beginnings, and it's got so much potential. Like, it could be so, so big one day. That's the beginning of that education system that you're talking about, I think, because currently we don't have an education system that is focused on emotional resilience and emotional well-being. But by you bringing this information to the forefront, maybe one day we can.
So that's really amazing. And I think one final tip is,
yes,
to say, when we feel a certain emotion, instead of saying I am sad or I am scared or I am angry, try changing that to saying I feel sad and I feel angry, because you are not sadness, you are not anger. You just feel angry at this very moment. And I think just by switching that slight mindset can really help you process emotions and detach it from yourself.
That's so helpful. Thank you. That's so, so, so helpful. Just these tiny little changes people will truly see big results in their life, I think, if you just change these few things up. As you know, because we often have Zoom calls that go for like 2 hours, just that aren't recorded, just between you and I, I could talk to you for so long. And it's so wonderful to see just all the amazing things that you're doing. But I'll probably wrap it up here because we're reaching an hour. But I do have a final question for you.
Yeah.
And you can answer rapid fire, or you can answer like think about it, however you want. Okay. My final question is, What is one thing that you wish you had known about your body when you were younger?
Oh, so many things. I think that I wish I knew that. I mean, I don't know what's the right way of saying this word, but I guess I'm just going to say it outright, like your vagina. I wish I knew that every vagina looks different, and yeah, that there is no like good looking vagina or a bad looking vagina. And I also wish that I knew that every single body type is just as beautiful as one another. And I think I grew up in a culture where being skinny was being idolized, and that you're beautiful, you're more worthy to be in society if you had a nice body. And so I spent a lot of my life focusing on that and trying to look skinny and trying to look good. And I think I wish I knew that. I wish I had spent less time trying to perfect how my body looked and hiding myself with clothes and hiding my own body and embraced who I was more. Aww. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Yes. I guarantee you that honestly, probably everybody listening to this will agree with, will have felt the same at some point in their life. Oh, thank you so much for this fantastic conversation. I'm so honored that you're on my show. And you can find Victoria's work on Instagram at extra_pinata, or she's also got another amazing account at Leap With Me. So check out either of those. I'll link them both. And yeah, thank you for being here. I love you.
Thank you so much for having me, and I love you too.
No, thank you. All right.
Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of the About Your Body podcast. I hope that Victoria's words about difficult emotions, how to handle them, as well as actionable steps that you can take to have a better mindset towards your life were helpful for you. Personally, I found them incredibly insightful. I think she is a very, very strong and empowered woman. My favorite quote from this episode was, "We need to find a task that is meaningful to us that moves us into a state of flow." You can find About Your Body on Instagram at about.your.body. You can also see my Etsy store, which is etsy.com/shop/aboutyourbody. That's E-T-S-Y. Or you can check out my design portfolio, which is my website, www.byrachelholtz.com. I'll leave everything in the show notes. Have a good one.